This podcast is being brought to you by our good friends at Have You Seen That Show. Hey everybody, welcome once again to Tribute Land, the podcast with Scott Keogh. We got a great one for you today. Hey listen, to keep this thing rolling live on the air, if you can swing 99 cents, that is all we ask. If you can hop over to iTunes or Amazon.com and just buy one or more Scott Keogh songs, that keeps this podcast rolling so we can hit each and every tribute artist out there. So if you're a tribute artist, you want to contact me, just give me an email. It's sk@scottkeogh.com. Any feedback, same thing, sk@scottkeogh.com. All right, let's get started. Here we go. Awesome. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Tribute Land with Scott Keogh, the podcast that's all about tribute artists, tribute band members, hosted by a tribute artist, and where we dig into the lives, the behind the scenes, behind the microphone, behind the person with the microphone. So our guest today is legendary Rainier Martin. She does the premiere Donna Summer all across this beautiful globe of ours. And we're excited to have her, and we're gonna talk to her in just a few seconds here. But real quick, I gotta drop our favorite sponsor. Tribute Land is brought to you every episode so far by Shake and Bake. Boring chicken? Is your chicken just getting tired and old? Make it a Shake and Bake night tonight with Shake and Bake. All right, here we go. Rainier Martin is on the phone with me. Rainier, what's going on?
How are you, Scott?
Oh, I can't complain. We want to know what you're up to these days. What's new in your life? And I'll ask you some questions later, but give us the current update on what you're up to these days.
Currently, I have a show with Rod Stewart. So we have been traveling the states with the tribute tours present Donna Summer and Rod Stewart. So currently that's what I'm doing. I'm still doing gigs on the side, but that's the main hustle right now.
That's exciting. Very cool. Rod Stewart and Donna Summer. That's quite a energetic concert. You're going to see some classic rock, some pop, and then you're going to see some dance and some disco and some heartfelt ballads, I'm sure. That sounds like a fun show.
It's awesome. Basically, you know, I go out and do Donna Summer, and then Rod does a set, and then we come together and do a set together with some of Rod's stuff, some of Donna's stuff, and then some cover tunes that were, you know, popular back in the 70s and 80s. It's a really, really exciting show. People seem to really get a kick out of it.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And so if they want to catch you in your shows, is the best way to get a hold of you by going to your website? Do I have it right? Is it RainierSings.com?
Yes, that is correct, but that's not updated at the time. The best way to keep up with my shows is on Facebook, because everything is more up to date there. I have to get around to the website, but yes, my current dates are on my Facebook page.
Okay.
So that's good.
Cool. So everyone's going to hit you up on your Facebook and check you out and see what you're doing these days. So yes. A little backtracking here. I understand that you have done some music videos, some motion pictures, television, and here's my favorite, Showtime at the Apollo. Can you talk about some of these things?
Yes. I think it was back in 2002. I went to, you know, stood in line for 4 hours to audition, and I made it through, and it was, like, totally exciting. I had my first 15 minutes of fame. I didn't win, unfortunately, but it was just such an awesome experience just being on that legendary stage where so many have been before. They had an awesome sound system, and like I said, I, you know, got my 15 minutes of fame. You know, we went to dinner afterwards, and people were noticing me on the street just who had left the Apollo. So it was very exciting, something, you know, I'll always remember. So that was something to go down in the books.
Ah, that's fantastic. You know, first of all, the reason why they saw you and recognized you on the street is, A, you didn't get booed off the stage, which happens all the time at the Apollo. Not only did you not get booed off, but you got a standing ovation, if I'm not mistaken.
I did. I sure did. So that's why I said I was so proud of my performance, even though I didn't win. Still left on cloud nine because I was just, they just gave me so much love and I was received in such a positive way. So, you know, I still took it as a win, even though I didn't win, you know, on the show, but they gave me much love. So that was all good. Yes.
Way to go. Way to go. All right. Well, let's dig into to Rainier. Let's find out what you're all about. People want to know. Your fans want to know. And so I'm going to ask the questions so that they can kind of figure out what you're, what makes you tick. Let's start in the early days. You know, where did you grow up? What do you call home?
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I've lived here in Philly all my life and have been singing since probably I could talk. But that's where, you know, I grew up in Philadelphia.
Philly. All right. And, you know, I happen to know that you are huge in Philly as well as Jersey because it's just right, you know, down the street, especially Atlantic City. I got the honor of sharing the same stage with you at Legends in Concert in the summer of 2013 at Bally's Atlantic City. If you want to talk a little bit about that run, that was exciting, and what a cool bunch of people that was.
Yes. First of all, let me say, I had stopped singing for 20 years. I had given up. I tried in my 20s, like, really hard to, you know, make something work. I had never wanted to be a tribute artist. I never wanted to be anyone other than myself. But as you know, the business is not that easy to break into. And after trying and trying and trying and getting lots of rejection, I just figured, you know, maybe this isn't what God has in plan. His plan is for me. So I had given up, you know, singing for 20 years. And just, I guess, 2012, the summer of 2012, I got the itch to sing again. So I started doing like little, you know, just, you know, little karaoke bars. You know, I would just go out just, you know, just to get that edge off because, you know, I was getting the urge to sing again. And then I was vacationing with my family in Atlantic City as we did every year. And then we were in Bally's and I saw all these Legends in Concert signs all across the hotel. And I looked and I was like, should I? And then, you know, I was just really hesitant. I'm like, no, I don't know if I'm going to do that because I didn't want to go back into that rejection world. But all my life, the part I missed was the first 45 my mother ever gave me was on the radio, which was Donna Summer's song. And I played it and I played it and I played it. And like most children do, they imitate what they hear. So that was the first song that I really can remember, like, taking a liking to and just playing it over and over again. So as I grew older and then I, you know, started singing out, they would do a double take when I would do on the radio. They would look and they were like, oh my God, is that her or is that, you know, the rest? So that's how Donna Summer, you know, that was my first sign of becoming Donna Summer. So anyway, back to Legends, we were vacationing at Bally's and I saw the signs. Should I not? Make a long story short, I did inquire, and then I happened to know Renee, you know, the lead dancer at Legends.
Captain Spaz, she's awesome.
I didn't know her. Yes, she's amazing. It's because of her, I even got the job. But I didn't know her, but I had taken one of her Zumba classes. So she remembered me, and so I showed her my tape and everything, and she was impressed, to make a long story short. So she forwarded it to, you know, the headquarters in Las Vegas. Basically, they listened to it and I got an email back like the next day saying, thanks, but no thanks. So once again, I was heartbroken and I was like, see, I knew I should have never tried and that type of thing. And then that very same day, later that evening, I got another email from Legends and they stated that they were having auditions and could I get down there like the next day? So what had happened was they had a Donna Summer coming and she took ill just like that. And basically I went the next day, I'm going thinking, oh, you know, with my Donna gear. Now, I had to run out to the store, get a wig, and I had never dressed up like Donna. I had never, you know, wanted to be Donna. But now I had this opportunity right in front of me. So I head down to Atlantic City next day. I'm ready to audition. And basically, I was handed my schedule. You got the job. Boom, just like that. Mm. So from 20 years not singing at all to literally on a stage, just like that.
That is a great story. That is a fantastic story. You know, I think what happens is you were defeated by music and the whole entertainment business. It kind of crushed your dream a little bit to do what you love. And then, but you had that itch. You still had that burning inside that, you know, it's like, you know what? Yeah, my head wants to quit, but my heart still wants to, you know, keep after this. And I think when you got that, that second wind, and then even though you got rejected again, fate like kind of took over and said, you know what? This girl's been after for quite a while. I think it's her turn. And we, like overnight, boom, there it is. And it's a real similar story to Josh Groban, who would, I don't know if you know this or not, but Josh Groban probably would not be doing what he's doing if it weren't for the same type of situation. They had a cancellation, and he had to do a fill-in duet with Celine Dion. And if it weren't for that last second cancellation, who knows if Josh Groban would be a household name today. And so you never know. And that's a cool, inspirational story that you just didn't quit. You didn't ever give up all the way. And you kept hanging on because you knew you had talent and you knew that there was a stage and a venue and a capacity to display your talent. So that's a really cool story. Thanks for sharing that with the world.
Sure. My pleasure.
All right. So, yeah, and I do remember Renee and the whole crew. The funny thing about Renee was she was our dance captain at the Legends in Concert. And such a cool dance captain. Everyone loved her, but you couldn't give her a compliment. Yeah. You tried to, but she was just like, no. I'm fat, frumpy, and stupid. Don't give me a compliment.
That's the truth.
Yeah, she couldn't accept the compliment, but they kept coming her way. So that was a fun.
Yeah, she's amazing. I really, you know, give her a lot of credit for me doing what I'm doing today because, you know, she saw something in me and she pushed for it. You know what I mean? And if it wasn't for her, you wouldn't be talking to me right now. You know what I mean? So she did play a huge part in me, you know, being where I am today with my singing and my music.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The guys were great, part of the crew, the band, Renee, Roberta, yes. Carol, Kim. What a great run that was at Atlantic City in Bally's. Fun summer, fun time, and we were glad to have you part of the crew for sure. Basically, Rainier, what is, besides the obvious, Donna Summer, who else are your musical influences and likes?
I would definitely have to say Whitney before her demise. I grew up in a house full of music. My grandmother, back in her day, actually was a singer, and she sang with a band and actually got offered a contract. But in those days, you know, family, you know, was, you know, something that you didn't do. So she chose family over that. But I definitely got my musical talents from my grandmother, and I miss her so much, and it's so hurtful. Every time I step on stage, she wasn't around. She passed away, unfortunately, and she was able to see me shine. So I know she's watching down from up above, but, you know, that's one thing I regret, that she wasn't able to, you know, see what I've accomplished. But I grew up in a house full of music. I can remember listening to Ella Fitzgerald. I remember listening to Lou Rawls, you know, all the good music. So I just have an ear for it because, you know, there's Natalie Cole, who unfortunately just passed. I mean, all the greats. You know, I grew up in a house full of music, you know, so there's so many.
It was just natural for you. I can tell. You just ooze R&B and soul. And you've got that Ella Fitzgerald vibe about you, so everyone can tell that just hears you sing. You're a natural. You've just got this on command. It seems effortless. Is it easy? Is it effortless?
You know, some days I was just working with a friend of mine. Like, there are some days I really feel like I'm having an outer body experience. Like, because there's some days when I get up on the stage and it's like my mouth is just moving. You know what I mean? And the sound is kind of just weird. It's just weird. And it's, I always tell the story. I said, you know, we, as singers, we all have bad days, and, you know, we wake up when, you know, your voice is just not what it should be. And then you have a show that day. And I always tell everybody, you know, when I pray before my shows, there are three people that I pray to. One, the obvious, God. Two, my grandmother. And three, Donna Summer. I just feel like we're definitely spiritually connected. And it, as crazy as that might sound, it's true. You know, you have those days where you're like, how am I going to get through the show? You wake up and your voice is just not right. And I tell you, yeah, you know, no lie. It just some days I just open my mouth and the sound, and I just pray and the sound comes out. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, it, you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. When you wake up and no sound does come out, it's a nightmare feeling for us.
Yes. The truth. Yes.
But I have no doubt that your grandma's in the front row cheering you on. Probably your biggest fan in the front row at every one of your shows, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm hoping so. Yeah.
So, okay, Donna Summer, what is the process of learning how to sing like Donna?
You know what? Some other people have asked me that, and I have to honestly tell you. Let me just say this. After I started doing Donna, you know, people were saying, well, you should try Beyonce, or you should try Rihanna. Like, you should try Diana Ross. Like, they were saying, like, you know, because some tribute artists do more than one character.
Right.
But I said, you know what? First of all, I want to master Donna before I even, you know, would go to do anyone else. But to be honest with you, I really don't even alter my voice. I was just blessed to have that tone that Donna has. So a lot of times when you hear me and you might hear little Donna, you're hearing Rainier singing a Donna song. You know what I mean? So I'm blessed in that way where I actually don't have to alter my voice to sound like Donna because our tones are just so similar, mm-hmm. which I'm blessed. You know, if I do another artist, then that's what I think the work would really come in because I would have to try to sound like that other person. But when Donna, I think, that sound just comes naturally.
Well, you that's know? What that's what we would call in tribute land, a lucky dog. You got lucky.
Yes.
Some of us yes. have to spend hours and hours refining our vocal intonations so that we can come even close to the person we're tributing.
Right.
But not only are you a natural singer, but you also have just a natural ability to project Donna Summer out of your vocals just on command. That's just crazy. That's awesome.
But you know what, I have to take the tables off of me for a minute because I have to tell you, the summer that we worked together, my daughter left singing Michael Bublé's music. She never even heard of Michael Bublé, but she left, and that whole summer, she was singing your song. You're amazing. I laughed so bad because I was like, Lexi, how do you know? I said, did you know that song before? She was like, no, I just saw it at the concert. And I was just so amazed. So you really had an effect on her. And like the music, your style, you're amazing. You already know that. But I mean, to touch a 9-year-old who has never even heard that type, you know, music before. And she left and she sang the music like throughout the summer just from being at the show.
That's so cool.
So I had to say that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's a good little story. Yeah. I dig that. And just so you guys know out there in podcast land, Rainier contractually had to say that to be on the podcast, and I'm glad you got that in because otherwise I couldn't put this on the air. You have to say something at least three okay. times, three things nice about the host, otherwise it just doesn't go to air. I'm kidding, but thank you so much for that. So I got to ask you this: what are you thinking about when you're on stage and you're performing?
Oh my God. Well, I have to say that even though I've been singing all my life, my nerves get to me all the time. Like, I'm usually a nervous wreck before I get on stage. And I think before I get on stage, I think I'm most fearful of forgetting the words. Like, the words of songs that I've sang for 20 years, but that's the nerve factor. But I think once I'm on stage and I open my mouth, and the notes come out and I don't forget the words, then I can vibe off the audience. So a lot of the time it depends on how my audience is, you know what I mean? So if they're vibing, then I'm more into it. You know what I mean? Like I can groove with them, but you know, sometimes you get an audience that's kind of tight, or, you know, like, sometimes we were open for Legends. I was the opening act, and you get people sitting there with their arms crossed. You know what I mean? Like they really didn't want to be there. So sometimes it's a little tough to break through it, but you know, I always do my best and just, you know, just try to get through, you know, once I break my nerves break, I usually get into the groove, and if, you know, especially if I see my audience is groove into it, then of course that makes you loosen up and get more into it. And I actually just did a show in New York on last Friday. I tell you, maybe 2,000 people. I have never, and I know as a singer, you know, every singer longs to hear that sound, that roaring of the crowd. I had my first roaring of the crowd. It was amazing. It was amazing.
That's so cool.
I think I was, man, it was amazing.
That's so, you know, cool. I know what you're talking about.
Yes.
Even if 200 people roar, it's a good feeling. But when you have 2,000 people roar, it brings you to a different state of emotion almost.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's something I've never, that was the first time in all these years that I experienced that. It was crazy. Like, I'm still on cloud nine. Like, did that really happen? I mean, I remember sitting at concerts, I think years ago, maybe about 10 years ago, I went to a Prince concert. And the roaring was so loud that my ears were hurting. And I just turned and looked at everyone. I was like, wow. I said, I wonder how it would feel to have thousands and thousands and thousands of people roaring for you. And I mean, it wasn't thousands and thousands, but two, I'll take two. You know what I mean? And it was an amazing feeling, an amazing feeling.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of got addicted to it. I want more, you know?
Oh, I know. Yes. I know. It's hard to go back to a 400-seater after you do 2,000 because the dynamics aren't quite the same.
Exactly.
No, I know. Do you ever think that Justin Timberlake or Bruno Mars or Beyonce, do you ever think that they get just so used to it when they get that 20,000 roaring every single one of their shows? Do you think they get kind of immune to it and it doesn't quite thrill them as much anymore?
I would hope not, you know, because, you know, easy come, easy go, you know what I mean? And you never know, just as quick as you get something, you could lose it. You know, it may be because I've been in a struggle for so long. I don't think I would ever get tired of it. Honestly, I don't ever think I would get tired of it. And I hope that they wouldn't take it for granted.
Sure.
And not, you know what I mean? And not appreciate it. And you know, I mean, I'm sure you're not going to want to cry every night about it, but you know what I mean? To the point where you still truly appreciate your fans and appreciate that they're appreciating your talent. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would have tired of that. I don't think so.
What do you want your audiences to feel at your shows and after your shows? What do you want them to go away with?
I want them to go away, especially when I'm doing my Donna shows. Like, I want them to feel the music. I want them to go back to those disco days, because a lot of the people that come to see me have, like when I was at Legends and we would have the meet and greet, you know, they would come and say, thank you so much. You know, I went to Adonis' show. You know, I saw that live, and you just brought back so many memories. And, you know, one man said when you opened up, he said when you came out on stage, he said my mouth dropped. And then he said you opened your mouth, and he just said, I mean, he said, this can't be. So just to take them back, because, you know, for the avid Donna fans, you know, if I can just help them relive, you know, some of the memories from back in the 70s. And, you know, I want them to feel the music. I want them to be like, oh my gosh, wow. Like, it was worth coming out to see her. She brought back memories. And that's a lot of the things that I hear. A lot of people come up and tell me stories about Donna. You know, they met her and, you know, and just how much, you know, how uncanny, you know, my look and sound was her. And just as, I just want them to appreciate, you know, to appreciate, you know, the talent. you know, and I feel it and I want them to feel it. So I guess, you know, that's what I want them to walk away with, saying like, you know, wow, she took me back.
Yeah.
And a lot of that's what I hear.
Cool. Yeah, that's good. You know, yeah, you definitely bring a lot of joy, to people, especially the hardcore Donna fans. When they hear you sing, you're able to sort of submerge them into a virtual reality world where they go back and they're right back to when the first time that they heard one of her songs, and you're able to recreate that live. Maybe they couldn't have ever gone to one of her concerts, and now they get to. I think that's such a cool thing that tribute artists are able to do. Now, if you were to, and I know you talked to Donna in your pre-show, you know, rituals. You know, you're talking to Donna that way. But if you were to actually talk to her while she was still alive, what would you say to Donna?
I think I would tell her just how much a musical influence she was, you know, for me growing up, because her record was one of the first records I really identified with. I think I really discovered my voice with her records. You know what I mean? I mean, I got my start in church singing, but, you know, that record was the first song that I really identified with. And, you know, she was just such a talented lady. I mean, her voice, like, I watch some of her videos now to this day and I get chills. Like, she didn't have to do much. She just commanded the room when she walked in. She didn't have to do much. She opened her mouth and everybody just stopped.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I mean, unfortunately, I wasn't able to meet her, but I have met some of her family members. I think it was 2013. I was invited to Boston, where she's from. Her old high school, they had a mural done in her honor, and I was invited to sing at the ceremony. So I got to meet a couple of her sisters and her brother and her niece, which is such a sweetheart. Like, we're in touch this day. So that was my first time, you know, performing, you know, for any of the family members. And, you know, they was kind of touchy because, you know, you're, you know, imitating their loved one. And, you know, I, you know, walked up to, you know, the family afterwards, and I was kind of nervous, you know, but I, you know, I was like, did you like it? You know, was, you know, hesitant. And one of the family members, like, looked at me with tears in her eyes, and she said, you know, it's really hard, because I think it had only been a year since Donna had passed at that time. And she just said that it, you know, was still really hard for them. They were still mourning. She said, but she had tears in her eyes. She said, I closed my eyes while you were singing, and she said, I could have sworn that it was Donna singing. And, like, that just broke me, because I totally didn't even expect to hear that. And then to hear it from, you know, a sister or aunt or niece, you know what I mean? Like, it's just something that I'll never forget. So, and just to know that they appreciated, you know, the tribute that, you know, that I was doing. So that's something that I'll never forget.
Oh, I'm so glad that I'm doing this podcast, because where else can you hear some of those stories that Rainier was just talking about? That's as good as it gets right there. That's like a chilling, like a give me chills in my arms type of story, because imagine, you know, put yourself in the place of those family members and try to figure try to see what they are going through at that time. They're fighting off the emotion. They're sad because, you know, she's gone, and there's that emotion, but then there's this joy of, oh my God, this is exactly what she sounded and looked and talked and walked like. And it's almost like I get a second chance to see her again. There's a split emotion going on right there that only a tribute artist can pull off. And so this is so cool. I'm glad that we're doing this. And these type of stories is kind of why I decided to start Tribute Land. Speaking of, brought to you by Red Bull, keeps you singing like Donna Summer all night, and it gives you wings. All right. I like dropping in my sponsors halfway through. Okay, another one for you here. Rainier, who would you most like to open for at a show?
I'm jealous of you, though. I saw your David Foster thing. I was like, oh, my God. That was amazing. Oh, my gosh. Who would I? You're lucky. I was like, that lucky dog. Oh, my gosh. I know you were nervous. I'm sorry to take it off me, but I know you were nervous as heck. I know you were nervous.
I was.
But you did an amazing.
I was nervous out of my mind before I took the mic. Once I took the mic, I had to kind of just change perspective. And I'm gonna do a full podcast on just the David Foster moment. That was a full day. It was like it's like an 8-hour day that happened that people don't realize. And it's like it's a 45-minute conversation that I'll do a full podcast on here eventually one of these days. Okay. There'll be a David Foster episode. But thank you for that. I appreciate you noticing that moment. And I will get around to telling everyone about all the details, but it was a top, like your Apollo moment. That was like a top five moment of my life.
Wow. I can just imagine. Donna worked with him too. So, I knew who he was. I was like, oh my gosh, you lucky dog. Oh, that was amazing.
I can see you opening for like a Alicia Keys or a Beyonce or something sort of a soulful concert where you kind of fit in with. I see one of those two singers seems to be a blend. Maybe someone like the new kid on the block. What's her name? She sounds like Mariah Carey. She's like 18. I forget her name right now. I'm drawing a blank, but sort of a Beyonce, Mariah Carey feel. I think you might do well opening for someone like that.
Well, I think I with a lot of younger folks not knowing who Donna is, unfortunately, they might know a couple of her songs, but if you say to a younger person, Donna, they're like, huh? They don't know. But if you say, what about, Last Dance or Bad Girls? If you sing a couple notes of the song, they're like, oh, I know that song, but they may not know. I think I would fit better with some of the older groups. Like I did open for Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. I did open for them. I think people more in that generation, because they know who I am. You know what I mean? They know who Donna is, not me. They know who, the tribute is for. Like, I don't know if you know Howard Hewitt, like people maybe from the 80s, 70s, late 70s, early 80s, like Evelyn Champagne King, Gloria Gaynor. I think it would be a better fit for, that bracket of music.
Oh, did I tell you that Gloria Gaynor was there that night with David Foster also?
Who was there?
Gloria was there that night.
She was?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, I would love to have introduced you to her, but I didn't meet her either. So,
yeah. So, what was that affair anyway? What was it? A music awards or what? What was it?
No, it was actually it's a huge charity event put on with Muhammad Ali called Celebrity Fight Night, and it's the biggest charity event in the world, and they have it usually twice a year, one other country, and then every year in Arizona. And David comes out with his gang of his band and his artists, and he produces the whole show, and it's quite the thing. It's quite the thing.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, and so have you pursued original songs?
Actually, yes. I was working with a producer a little while ago. I actually have about 6 original cuts. An album was supposed to be released, but that's kind of on hold right now. So I haven't really been talking too much about that. I've been focused. I've been pretty busy with the Donna stuff right now. But so that's, I guess, to be continued because I, kind of trying to finish up, with the things with Donna obligations that I have right now.
Sure. And it's one thing I always try to encourage other tribute artists is, I think that, your fans are going to want to hear some Rainier originals at some point. I think that'll do wonders for your brand and your, your range. I know you have it in you, and I'd be excited to hear a couple of original Rainier songs. And it's tough to fit it in. God knows, life happens. And when life happens, the last thing on your list is recording and writing music. When you can't fit it in, it's the last thing that gets kicked to the curb. So it's like, I can't, can't fit that in on a Wednesday or Thursday, maybe in March. So,
right.
I get that.
That's right.
Hey, tell us about one of your most embarrassing moments on stage or craziest moments on stage.
It happened to be at Legends. I don't know if you were, I guess you weren't there. It was New Year's Eve, 2013, maybe.
Okay.
And we were doing the close, and we were singing, I guess my little set was, It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year, whatever the name that Christmas song is. And you know how we, you know, walk across the backstage and walk down a couple steps? Well, my heel decided to get caught in my dress. So I fall down the steps on New Year's Eve with the full house. So, yes, that was how I ended my year. I didn't get hurt, but I was just like totally, totally embarrassed. And once I had fallen down, I continued to sing like a professional would. But then as I tried to get up, I slipped on my boa. So I couldn't get up. So, yes, I mean, I got up and I laughed. I wasn't hurt, but like I was totally, totally embarrassed. And so, you know, we have the meet and greet after that, and we go, you know, and I'm like talking to Chris. I'm like, I do not want to go out there. I do not want to go out there. So she was like, no, you're fine. Don't worry about it. You know, go. So I go out there, and, you know, me with the sense of humor that I have, you know, like people are coming up saying, oh, you were great. You were great. So, you know, being embarrassed that I had fallen, I was like trying to make a joke about it. Like, you know, I made a couple comments like jokingly about me falling, but no one acknowledged it. It was almost like they were embarrassed. It was the craziest thing. Like I made a couple comments, you know, to a couple people, and they just like ignored my comment. Like I didn't even say it. It was the weirdest thing. I think they were actually embarrassed for me that maybe they didn't want to acknowledge it, but I think that would be at the top of the list. Falling down the steps. The closing of the show.
That gravity gets us sometimes.
Yes, absolutely.
What's a different type of song that we'd find on your iPod that would be unusual or embarrassing that, like, I wouldn't expect you to have that song on your iPod?
Believe it or not, I sing country.
Whoa.
Yes. I recorded a couple country songs as well. And to hear me sing those songs, I know you probably know one. One is called Stuck Like Glue.
Yeah.
And then the other one you may not have heard of is called See Jake. And that one is a tearjerker. And to hear that recording, you would have thought that I had been singing country my whole life.
Look at you with all that range. Nice.
Yes, it's amazing. And I actually thought about going country for a minute. I actually did. And, you know, we were just kind of going back and forth. But, you know, because the industry, like when you go, whatever you are introduced as, they kind of want to typecast you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we were kind of debating which way, if we were going to go the R&B way or country. But I love country music. And to hear that music, you wouldn't think it was coming from me at all.
Wow. Okay, well, there you go. On your first original album, you're going to drop some country songs in there also and just fool and just trick the whole world and say, hey, here's an R&B album. Right. Wait, here's a country song.
Right. Yes.
That's awesome. You know,
I love all types.
Sorry, go ahead. You like all types of music?
Yeah, I mean, I like a little bit of everything. Like, you know, soft rock, R&B, jazz. You know, there are a couple rap songs, not many, but a couple, you know, that I can relate to. I mean, if it's good or if it has a good meaning, you know, the song is standing for something, or if it's the beat that catches you. Yeah. I mean, I think I'm pretty versatile on my music, like the things that I like. But I think I like a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I hear you. If it's good, it's good.
That's right.
I tried country one time, and Nashville closed the borders on me. They said, don't come in here, Scott. It came out too pretty. It came out too pretty. I don't have enough twang or anger or something.
That twang, and it's the pronunciation of your words. You know what I mean? Yeah. The end of your words. that make it. I have to send you actually the clip that I did. You'll be amazed. You're like, oh my gosh, Rainier, I can't believe that's you. But the way I look at it is, if I feel it, I can sing it. If I can relate to it and feel it, I can sing it.
Nice. Now, so, what keeps you going through the ups and downs of this crazy thing called show business?
I guess I want to succeed. I want to succeed. And, you know, I gave up once. And, you know, I look at it at this point, I've come too far to quit now. You know, I've accomplished quite a bit in these last 3 years. And, you know, when it's your time, it's your time. So at this point, I'm not giving up. So when it gets rough, I mean, you know, it can be a little frustrating, but, you know, I look at what God has made happen in these short 3 years. I think I've accomplished more in these last 3 years than I did all the years that I had been singing, you know, the 20 years plus that I had been singing before that.
Sure. Well, that's cool. I mean, I think your fans out there can feel and sense your drive and your commitment to excellence. And, you know, persistence is half the battle. Persistence is what's going to keep you in the game. And you definitely have it. And it's exciting because you never know what's around the next corner.
That's right.
All right. So let's see here. Oh, yeah. Okay. So how many songs do you typically do on a show? And what is your favorite song to do? And I know that changes sometimes from time to time. But do you have a top one or two songs that you just know this is my go-to?
Mm-hmm. And it's on the radio. It's the first song that I ever learned from Donna Summer. And I think that's the song that I sound the most like her. Mm-hmm. And that's the one that everyone always did the double jerk of the head. Like, what? Is that her? Or, you know what I mean? Or is that the radio? So absolutely, hands down, would be on the radio.
Okay.
On the radio. Yeah.
Well, nice. My favorite song that you do is Last Dance. And I think that you kill that one. I think you do an incredible job of on the radio also, but I think Last Dance feels really just smooth, hot stuff. I like to listen to the way you do that. Bad Girls is fantastic, and you know you do a lot of good songs. But I think Last Dance for some reason tends to like bring emotion, I guess, to the whole forefront.
Right. I think that was her biggest hit, or the second biggest hit. So yeah, that one is that's a good song.
Good too.
I enjoy all of them. You know, I'm learning now actually a lot, some of her music from the 80s now, trying to, you know, just expand my Donna Summer song list. So I'm working on some songs she did from the 80s. Couple she did with Quincy Jones, and actually some that I didn't even realize that it was her singing. So I'm just, you know, I'm still learning, you know, as the time goes. But
sure.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk wardrobe. Now, for the fans out there who have not seen you in person, I want to paint a little visual for them. Rainier goes all the way 70s here and gets into a jumpsuit that is skin tight, and she pulls it off, and I don't know how she does it, because I could never do that kind of thing. I'm lucky. I'm a guy. I just throw a suit and tie on, and my wardrobe's really easy. So tell us about wardrobe.
Right. Wardrobe is expensive. Oh, my God. Everything is made, custom made. So, but I love it. I love dressing up. She was really, like, girly with the sequin and the sparkles, and I like anything that sparkles, so it kind of just gives me an excuse to spend money that I really don't have. Oh, this is for work. I need this for work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I have had costumes made that cost more than I was paying for the gig that I was getting it made for. So I guess that defeats the purpose. But it's an investment, because it's not like it's just a one-time use, you know. I will use them for years to come, so... but it's important. If you're going to do it right. You can't half step. You know what I mean? If you're going to played a part, you need the wardrobe to do that. So I can say through these last 3 years, I've accumulated quite a few jumpsuits and sequin gowns and, you know, but it's worth it. It's an investment. It's an investment.
It is an investment. And it's part of the tribute, I guess, requirements is not only do you need to sing like the person, but you need to somewhat at least look like the person, or at least what they represented, what they wore. And you know, I'm lucky in the sense that, you know, it's Buble just pretty much just a Sinatra look, which is a suit and a loose tie. But that being said, it's still fun to mess around and give new looks to your audience, because you don't want to stay stale, I guess.
Right, that's right.
So what would you be doing if you were not a professional singer / performer?
Well, you know, I'll say unfortunately, but fortunately in the same breath, but I do work a 9-to-5. So I'm working, you know, Monday through Friday, and then traveling on the weekends, and then, you know, taking off when I have like week-long gigs. So it's, and I'm a mother. So, you know, it's just, my life is very hectic, because there's a lot of things to do and not enough time to do it. So I probably would just have more time to do the thing, you know, the regular, I guess, living the regular life, 9-to-5, children, you know. But I seem to, God is good. I seem to manage to get it all in. We have Girl Scouts. We have dance. We have, then I'm out of town for the weekend. You know what I mean? Then we have school recital. So, you know, I seem to get it all in, but I'm running nonstop. So I think if I wasn't singing, I would just have a lot more time to take time to, you know, to do the, you know, the, I guess the 9-to-5 thing, live the 9-to-5 life, but not be as rushed and pressed for time to get everything done. I would just have more time to do that.
So. I think that time is definitely a sacrifice that that tribute artists really use, that we have to do to be successful, or, you know, even mildly successful, is that time commitment to the shows, to the traveling, to the wardrobe, to the practice, to the to whatever it is. And I'm not saying that it's more time than performers who are not tribute artists, but we tend to have shows that travel well, and so
right.
And so in doing that, sometimes we'll have a weekend where we have to fly to Texas, and then back on Sunday. So that whole Friday, Saturday, and Sunday is shot, even for just one show, because you're flying there Friday,
right,
doing the show on Saturday, and flying back on Sunday. And time is right. Is definitely, it's that sacrifice that we put into this to A, do what we love, but also to B, to keep in the game and to further our I guess careers. And I don't think I think that people think it comes easy to us, and it's something it's an up and down field. You know, you'll have good weeks and then some off weeks, but I think time and persistence are those things that we have to battle through every week.
That's the truth. It's never enough time in a day. It's like, oh my gosh, the day's over. I still didn't get A, B, C, D done. You know what I mean? But you do what you do. I'm running nonstop. I'm tired, but you know what? It's worth it. You know, I've never been afraid of hard work and, like you said, sacrifice. So I just do what I can do and try to get everything in. And, you know, my girlfriend was just saying to me the other day, how you're a mom, you're going to Girl Scouts, then you're out of town. Like, how do you do it? She's like, then you're doing Christmas tree stuff. Then you're doing, she's like, oh my God, like, how you do it? I said, I do it because I have to do it. You make the time and you make it happen. You just have to be able to prioritize things that need to get done and then fit everything else in the schedule. It's something you have to sit and plan. You said, you know, it doesn't just happen. You just have to do the best that you can to try to get everything done. And sometimes, unfortunately, you'd miss a thing or two, but, you know, just do the best that you can.
So Tribute Land podcast listeners, I think what Rainier is trying to say is that she's looking for a personal assistant, and she's taking applications Thursdays and Wednesdays.
That's about right. That's about right.
She's like,
oh my God.
You're like, listen, I haven't gotten A, B, and C done. I'm running around like crazy. And Scott's asking me to do original songs. Will you just cool it with the original songs?
That is the truth. Oh my gosh.
All right. Well, we're coming to an end here. Did you have some fun on this thing or what's going down?
I had a ball.
Me too. Thank you so much for joining us. I am honored to call you my friend, and thank you so much for coming on. Before we leave, just two more things. One, I want to make sure that your fans worldwide can get a hold of you on your Facebook page, and what is that?
Okay, that is my old lady glasses. Okay, that is www.facebook.com/ my name, Rainier.Martin. And that's Rainier.Martin, MARTIN.
Perfect. And there you have it, people. So get it there. Go to her site. Give her some nice words of wisdom and praise. And I will put this podcast on her Facebook page once it goes live on iTunes. And last question for Rainier. What would you like to deliver as far as a message to all of your fans and friends and family out there in Tribute Land across the world?
I just want to thank all my family and friends for the support, for being there for me during this 20-plus year struggle and just joining in on my happiness. I mean, I'm not where I want to be yet, but just for joining me on the journey that I'm taking. And I have to give a special shout out to my 10-year-old Alexis, because she's my manager. She asked me, 'cause she's my manager. So she stays on me and makes sure that, you know, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. And, you know, just, she's understanding. She hates when I travel, but you know, she understands that mommy's working. I take her to, you know, everything that I can. But just for her support and, you know, everyone's love and support and taking this journey with me.
Now, is Alexis the one that was singing my songs that summer?
Yes. Yes, she is.
All right. Nice job, Alexis. A little shout out to you when you listen to this podcast. Way to go. Thank you. And way to support your mom big time. Rock and roll, Alexis. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's Tribute Land with Scott Keogh. That's Rainier Martin. Everyone have a good rest of your week, and I'll talk to everyone soon in Tribute Land. Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
So don't forget who's taking you home. Oh, in whose arms you're gonna save the last dance for me. A pretty mama, won't you save the last dance for me? I'll make a promise that you'll save the last dance for me. Save the last dance, oh, the very last dance for me.
And just like we end every single Tribute Land podcast, we give a brief shout-out, acknowledgement, spotlight to an Elvis Presley tribute artist somewhere around the world. And today, this podcast, it's my good friend and super stylish James Dean-style Elvis. He's amazing. He can sing and dance like the young Elvis. He's got the vocal pipes. He's got it all. He's an amazing dude. But I'm telling you, man, the guy is James Dean in the flesh. His name is Victor Trevino, and you can see him at his Facebook page at Victor Trevino Jr. Fan. That's F-A-N. That's his fan page on Facebook. So go check him out. You'll be glad you did. And that, my friends, is the podcast. Good night.